Okay, we're beginning on the top of Mzayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara is saying, Itmar, Machloket Amoraim. It's a Machloket that's found in Yevamot. And really, the details of the Machloket are really over there. Here we just get some of the highlights of it. Avrulo Banim Bioto Oved Kochavim. He had children when he was not Jewish. Vinit Gayer. And then he converts. Yochanan Omer, Ein Lo Bechor Lenachala. The new children that are born at this point in time, Ein Bechor Lenachala. Shimon Lakish Omer, Yeshlo Bechor Lenachala. That he does have a Bechor Lenachala, because it's as if there was a reset button that was pressed. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Ein Lo Bechor Lenachala, Davele Rishit Ono. He already had the first of his strength. He had a firstborn. Happened to be that it was when he wasn't Jewish. But he did have a Reshit Ono already, and therefore, whatever he has now as a Jew is not Reshit Ono. Shimon ben Lakish Omer, Yesh lo b'chor l'nachala, Gershenit Gayer, k'katan sh'nolad dami. Rish Lakish's view is as opposed to Rabbi Yochanan, that a Ger that converted has a din like a katan. Now, it doesn't mean that Rabbi Yochanan doesn't believe that it's k'katan sh'nolad dami. Obviously, the question between them is the extent to which we say katan sh'nolad dami. According to Rish Lakish, we view katan sh'nolad dami literally. It's as if he's a completely new entity. It's as if he has no connection to anything that was in his past. It's as if he was born again and started afresh. Rabbi Yochanan says, yeah, he's katan sh'nolad dami in terms of his relationship to certain arayot and yerusha, certain factors that make the makement katan sh'nolad dami, but that doesn't change certain facts. That, for instance, he had Reshit Ono. You can't change that. That's a fact. And that fact can't be changed over here. And the relationship with his previous family is what is severed through Kikatan Shinolad Dami. But that relationship is all that is severed. It's not the facts that were on the ground that are severed. Va'azdu l'tamayu, this Machloket Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan parallels another Machloket Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish where they have the similar opinions. Dimar hayulo banim bi'oto ovid kochavim. He had children when he was not Jewish. Vinit Gayer, and then he converts. Yochanan Amar, Kiyem Piri Ribya. He already was Mikayem Piri Ribya. He doesn't have to do it again. Shimon Lakish Amar, Lo Kiyem. He didn't accomplish Piri Ribya. Yochanan Amar, Kiyem. He was Mikayem it because the Pasuk in Yishayahu says, Lo Tohu Bira'ah, Lashevet Yitzarah. God says, I didn't create the world to be barren, to be empty. I created it in order to be settled. Lashevet Yitzarah tells you that there is a connection between the child and the father because the Torah says that the world was created to produce inhabitants. Therefore, even as a goy, there's a din of this yichus. And if that's the case, then when he converts, according to Rabbi Yochanan, where Kirshen Kirshen Shinola Dami doesn't wipe everything out, then that relationship that existed under Lashevet Yitzarah still exists after he converts. And that relationship makes it that he was already Mekayim, the mitzvah, Peruvu. Because of the fact that there is a correlation or a yichus or some sort of connection between the children that he had beforehand and he himself, which accomplishes that mitzvah. Shimon Lakish Amar, Lo Kiyem Piri Rivya. You're not accomplishing the din of Piri Rivya. Ger Shinit Geir Kikatan Shenolad Dami. That a ger that converts is as if he was reborn. And again here, reborn to the extent that it's no connection to any action, anything that happened before. And just because he had children before, doesn't mean now that you have children that are meaningful in the context in which you are right now. It's richa, and we need both machlokot. Diit mar bahaka maito. If we only had the first machlokot with regards to bechor, that whether it's a bechor nachla or not after he's converted, bahaka mar Rabbi Shimon Lakish mishum deoto ovin kochavim la bnei nachla ninu. That's because when they were not Jewish, they were not bnei nachla ninu. Rashi claims over here, ovdei kochavim, they are not in a position by which they inherit their father after they convert. Rashi makes it very clear here that he's making that statement after they convert, which means that Rashi is making a distinction that's very important, which is when we say la b'nei nachala ninu, that means not while they were goyim. While they were goyim, they do have a din of nachala. Tosafot already said that before, you'll say it again here, that when they are not Jewish, the Torah recognizes the father-son relationship, and there is Yerusha min haTorah for a goy, father to son. What Rashi is pointing out is that once you convert, then that relationship is severed, and therefore there's no nachala midoraita. The child only inherits the father midrabanan. That's because we don't want him to be tempted by the money to go back and be a goy, because then he'll inherit his father. So in order to give him Yisrael, the Chachamim made it that midrabanan, he inherits his father. But midoraita, there's no longer inheritance, and that's what Rashi seems to be saying. Tosafot, on the other hand, is bothered, and he says, Perish Bakunjis, he brings Rashi's interpretation, and then he says, the Ovei Kochavim, Yereshit Aviv, Dvar Torah, says, wait a minute, a Ovei Kochavim does inherit his father, Mina Torah. Tosafot doesn't mention the fact that Rashi said, La'arsh Achashinit Gairu, after they converted. Even when he quotes Rashi, he has Mishinet Gairu, but if you look in the Girsa of the Tzon Kodoshim, Tosafot doesn't have the word Achashit Gairu by Rashi. And it makes it sound like Rashi is saying this, period. And actually, the Rabbeinu Gershom actually says that, because he says, "B'geyutan la b'nei nachalah ninyu." When they're still goyim, they don't have a din of nachalah, they ain't av to oveik kochavim. There's no din of an av to oveik kochavim. And Tosafot says, it's just not true. He is your Rashi David Dvar Torah. Ela la b'nei nachalah ninyu. What does it mean that they're not b'nei nachalah? B'kamar hainu, the Torah b'chorah. They don't have a din of b'chorah. So even though min haTorah, a son will inherit his father when he's a goy, there's no din of bechor. So that means that everybody inherits evenly when you have sons that are born to a goy. There's no din of bechorah. The din of bechorah is a unique aspect that's associated with Israel. And that's what it means over here. The reason Reish Lakish says that there's no din of bechor beforehand that wipes out the din of bechor now is because there is no such thing as a din of bechor when he was a goy. So he never accomplished bechorah, even though it was Reish Tano, because it's not relevant in the world of a goy. So now when he comes into the world of a Jew, this is his first opportunity to have a bechor under the auspices of the halacha that recognizes a bechor as a different entity. So Tosafot sees the distinction as being a distinction in bechor in particular. Rashi says that it's a distinction that revolves around nachalah per se. And again, Rashi differentiates between nachalah while he's a goy, where there is nachalah, versus nachalah after he's nidgayer, where there is no din of nachalah. Rabbeinu Gershom brings a Lishna Achrina that has to do with Gerut, the way that Rashi explains it over here, which seems to be a much better way to explain it because of the problems that we do find that a goy does inherit his father, midoraita. And the same thing yesterday with regards to this Machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to why it is that there's this severing of the relationship. Rashi again mentions the fact that they're not b'nei nachalah when horatan shelo b'kedusha. Whereas Tosafot focused on Gershin Nidgayer Kikatan Shinolad Dami. He uses a different terminology. It's more along the lines of what Rashi says over here, which is that once you convert, you sever that relationship. And even though Midoraita, it works when you are a goy, once you convert, that relationship is severed. And that's what creates the lack of Nachala over here. So therefore, you would have thought maybe Rav Shimon Lakish's position relies on that. When that's the case, Aval Baha, in the case of Piruvu, Ema Modi Le Rabbi Yochanan, Delo Tov Vira'ah, the Shevet Yitzara. Ravidle, Shevet, it's not an issue of Nachala, maybe he agrees to Rabbi Yochanan Shita. Because the world wasn't created to be empty, to be barren, and he did what was demanded of him in this context. And therefore he would have included them or said that they accomplished Piruvu. Bi'itmar Baha, if it only said it by the case of Piruvu, Baha Kam Rabbi Yochanan. Maybe that's where Rabbi Yochanan has his position of Baha, but the case of Bechor, he would agree to Rav Shimon Lakish that Nachla is different. Tzricha, that's why I need both Machlokot. Right, so now let's take a bigger picture view of what is going on over here. In terms of Pru or Vu, it's very important to understand whether there is one mitzvah of Pru or Vu, or a mitzvah of Pru or Vu, and a separate mitzvah of Leshevet. That's number one. Number two is, are non-Jews mitzvah in Piri or Rivia? These two questions turn out to be a machloket rishonim in the Gemara in Yevamot. And even Tosafot himself, in different places, is soter himself with regards to this din, whether you can separate out some of these dinim. For instance, Tosafot over here says that the lashon here is different than the lashon in Yevamot. He says in Berak Vayimto, Kamar B'lashon Acher, Demikara Nami B'nei Piriya Rivya Ninu. Says in Yevamot, the goy originally was at the din of Piriya Rivya. When it says that, it can't be mean that they really are chayav in Piri or Rivya. That's just not true. But rather, what it means is that they accomplish Piri or Rivya, even though they don't have a sibui of Piri or Rivya. Or in essence, what Tosafot sees there is somewhat of a conflation of Leshevet Yitzara and Piriya Rivya. Even if you're not Chayav in Piriya Rivya, you still have a din of Leshevet. And Leshevet is the accomplishment, is the outcome of Piriya Virivya. Why do you have Piriya Rivya? Leshevet Yitzara. Because the world's created to be inhabited. Since it's created to be inhabited, you've accomplished Piriya Rivya. So even if you don't have a Tziboy of Piriya Rivya, when you inhabit the world or create inhabitants in the world, you've now accomplished Piriya Rivya. So here, Tosavot conflates the items and says that Piriya Rivya, and even though they're not mitzvah in it, they accomplish it through Leshevet. In other places, Tosavot mentions that he thinks that Goy is Chayav in Piriya Rivya. And the evidence is the Gemara in Yevamot says that he already accomplished Piriya Rivya. Doesn't say he accomplished Leshevet. Says that he accomplished Piriya Rivya. It means a Goy is Chayav in Piriya Rivya, just like a Jew. And that's because Leshevet. So then you would have to understand whether Leshevet is an explanation of Piriya Rivya, or is Leshevet the totally separate mitzvah. Over there, if you say that the Goy is Chayav in Piriya Rivya, makes it sound like you have to say Ru or Vu, the command that was given to Bnei Noach, was given to Adam HaRishon, therefore has application to everyone. Even though we have a general principle, if a halacha is given pre-Har Sinai and not repeated after Har Sinai, that only belongs to Jews. Nevertheless, over here, it's such a fundamental mitzvah. How do I know that? Because of the pasuk in Yeshayahu that says, L'shevet Yitzara, that God created the world to be inhabited. Therefore, it even applies to a non-Jew. So that's one way to view it, that Piriya Rivya is explained by L'shevet, and therefore it applies to both of them. The other way to view it is that L'shevet is a different mitzvah than Peruravu. It's a mitzvah of Peruravu. There's a mitzvah of L'shevet. L'shevet might be the outcome of Peruravu, but it's still a separate command. And the goyim might be chayav in Leshevet, but not be chayav in Peru Rebu. That's what Tosfot is suggesting over here, which is that they do have a din of Leshevet, and when they do Leshevet, they accomplish Peru Rebu, but they're not commanded to do Peru Rebu. They don't have a mitzvah of Peru Rebu. So whether they have a mitzvah of Leshevet, or they accomplish, it's a mitzvah kiyumit, when they do it, one of those two, and therefore you accomplish the same outcome as Peru Rebu, even though you don't actually have a mitzvah of Peru Rebu. So here Tosfot separates between them, but in some senses conflates the outcome and says that they become one because of the outcome that is required. This has nafkaminot implications, for instance, in situations where the individual would be not be chayav in Peruvu, but might be chayav in Leshevet. So for instance, a woman, or a shifcha knanit, whereby they don't have a din of Peruvu because of the fact that it's a mitzvah that is only incumbent upon a man, not on a woman. But for instance, let's take an Eved Kenani. An Eved Kenani is Chayav Mitzvot Ki Isha. He's Chayav Mitzvot like a woman. So what does that mean for his requirements with regards to Peru Revu? Does he have a din of Peru Revu? If he's Chayav Mitzvot Ki Isha, then technically he should not be Chayav in Peru Revu. But maybe he's still Chayav in Leshevet, because he does have a requirement to create inhabitants in the world. So if you can say that it's a separate mitzvah, maybe you can also then say he's Chayav in Leshevet, even though he's not Chayav in Peru Revu. Or, do you say that when we say that an Eved Kenani is Chayav in Mitzvot Ki Isha, that's only when that means that the Isha has a Chiyuv in the Mitzvot. But in Mitzvot, where the woman is Turah, not because of her standing in Mitzvot Aseh Shezman Grama, but because she's an Isha and it's not relevant, so Peru Revu, things like Lo Takifu Pat Rosh Chem, certain Mitzvot where there's no relevance for a woman, maybe the Eved Kenani is still Chayav. Then you could argue that he's Chayav in Peru Revu. Or again, by Shifcha Kananit, there the Gemara speaks about, in certain instances, we don't allow a woman to be Hefkera because she causes problems for men that get involved with this woman. And therefore, Beit Din intervenes in order to stop situations like that. Question is, why is Beit Din intervening? Is Beit Din intervening simply because of the sin that's going on? Or is Beit Din intervening because this woman also has certain obligations? If we leave her in this status, she's not going to be able to accomplish that mitzvah, where she's a chetzi shifcha kananit, chetzi bat korin, those situations, what's the compelling reason to free her, or to resolve her status? Is it because we don't want people, her to be hefkera, and to be doing avirot? Or is that simply because there's maybe a mitzvah, leshevet? So Tosfot in different places formulates it differently as to why it is that the shifcha kananit, we intervene in those situations, as whether there's a mitzvah, leshevet, on the shifcha kananit or not. So that would deal with whether these are one mitzvah or two mitzvot. It's important here, the Gemara here says that he only accomplished Leshevet, not Peru Revu. Gemara in Yevamot says he also accomplished the mitzvah of Peru Revu. That difference Tosfot wipes out over here, but if you look at that in literally, it might be a machloket sugyot as to whether a goy is chayav in Peru Revu only chayav in lashevet. Just as a side note, we did the Mekorot back in Yivamot. You can take a look at the Mekorot that we had there. The Aruch HaShulchan has a very interesting shita with regards to this issue, where he says that the Jews have a din of pruvu, which means that it's a chiyuv gavra in terms of creating inhabitants or procreating, whereas the goyim have a chiyuv on a national or universal level, which is that no particular individual has an obligation of pruvu, but they have an obligation as a whole, l'shevet yitzara, in order to settle the world, in order to produce children. Because it's not a personal obligation, can't hold any individual accountable for it, but you would have to hold the world as a whole, has to be moving in that direction. Speculating that maybe the China one-child policy, maybe that's the type of universal thing which says that on a universal basis, we're going to limit the number of children. Maybe that's against this concept of l'shevet yitzara, according to the Aruch HaShulchan. But he has a very interesting distinction between the Jews' obligation and the Goy's obligation with regards to procreation. The Rambam has a chiddush over here, which then changes the nature of the machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Until now, we're arguing about whether the pru revu or the l'shevet yitzara of his standing as a Goy applies to him once he's a Jew. Rish Lakish says no, because he's katan shenola dami. We sever the relationship completely from his pre-existing form, and now he's a totally new being, and therefore whatever happened before has no bearing now. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, says it doesn't matter that in terms of certain mitzvot, he hasn't accomplished the mitzvah while he's a Jew, but he in reality created offspring, and that's the whole purpose of Peru Rabu. So we don't look at his accomplishment of the mitzvah in the sense of doing the mitzvah while he's a Jew. We look at it as, what's the totzah? The totzah was that he had children. If he had children, then he's done because he did what was incumbent upon him in terms of causing inhabitants of the world. And he doesn't sever that relationship completely, and therefore he's accomplished it. That's the way we would read this. Rambam adds an additional factor here that Rabbi Yochanan only says this if his children convert. So that changes the whole view of why Rabbi Yochanan thinks it works over here. The reason Rabbi Yochanan thinks it works over here is because his children came with him, which means that they are now Jewish children. And then that would then say the dynamic of pru revu is that you need to create offspring that will then carry on the Mesorah. You can accomplish that in one of two ways. You can have children while you're a Jew, and that are Jewish children that carry on the Mesorah, or you can have children who convert with you. Those children, even though technically everybody's ger, jinit gayer, ketatan, nola, dummy, Rabbi Yochanan retains a certain amount of that relationship that now you've created in the world, people that are carrying on the Mesorah, people that are Jews now. And so therefore you accomplish the mitzvah. Rish Lakish says that there's no relationship between you and those children, so therefore you can't accomplish it. But for the Rambam, it's clear here that if you converted without those children, you wouldn't have a din of pru revu. So then he's clearly looking at the totza'ah, but not just the totza'ah as being that you had children, but totza'ah that you had Jewish children. And therefore, you could even read it further than that. I don't think that's necessarily mukhraf in the Rambam, but you can read it that the din of pru revu is not simply to have children, but to raise those children and raise them in a certain manner. And if you raise them as Jews and you raise them as Yisraelim, that is what accomplishes the mitzvah. And therefore, if they convert with you, then you have that in hand. If they don't convert with you, then you don't have that. So you could even extend it a little further. I don't think it's mukhraf in the Rambam. But the Rambam changes that dynamic by adding that additional factor that the children were in Yitzgayer. That's not mentioned anywhere in the Gemara. But the Rambam clearly says that that's the condition over here. So according to most Rishonim, the Kiyum of Piri Rivya happened while he was a Goy. According to the Rambam's formulation, the Kiyum is actually after he converted. The Kiyum happens because his children convert with him, and then there's a Kiyum of Piri Rivya. But had it been that his children didn't convert, he wouldn't have been Mikayim Piri Rivya. So that's another nafkamina between the Rambam's formulation and other Rishonim, which is when did he accomplish Piri Rivya? According to those Rishonim, then he accomplished it while he was still a Goy, and that's why you're patur over here. Whereas according to the Rambam, he is mekayim it now when those children convert, not when he was a Goy. All right, so now the Gemara says, Tanan, we have our Mishnah, Mishalo ayu lo banim, a person who never had children, v'nasa isha shekvar yalda, and he marries a woman who already had children, in that instance, they're not going to be a Bechor the Kohen, because Peterechem, the woman already had children, Bechor the Nachla will be, because it's his Reishito, no, it's his first child. Oda shivcha v'nishtachara. Oda ovedet kochavim v'nitgariya. These are the next two scenarios in the Mishnah. If while she was a shivcha, finished achara, and then she was freed. Oda oved kochavim, she was an oved kochavim, then she converted. Umi shibata liyisrael yalda, and then once she joined Klal Yisrael, she gave birth. Vlada b'chor l'nachala, v'ena b'chor l'kohen. That offspring is a blood for b'chor nachala, but not for b'chor l'kohen. Yalda miman. Who is the father of this child over here? That we say there is b'chor l'nachala, but there is no b'chor l'kohen. So there not being b'chor l'kohen makes it sound like she already had children. I mean that she had children prior to this point in time, both when she was either a goya or whether she was a shivcha kananit. And then now, after she has converted, after she's been free, she marries and has children. So it's not peter rechem, so there's no b'chor l'kohen, but it is a b'chor l'nachla, which seems to imply that for the father, it's a first child. So who is the father here? Ilemam Yisrael, shaloi yulu banim. If you say that it was Yisrael who never had children before, ma'iria gyoret v'shivcha. What's the chiddush here about it being a convert? Or being a shivcha knanit that was freed, afilu bat Yisrael nami. The previous statement in the Mishnah already told you that even when it's a regular Israelite, if she's had children and he hasn't had children, that's a b'chor l'nachla, not b'chor l'kohen. What's the chiddush here? Elav miger shayu lo banim v'nit gayer. Must be a case where it's a ger also. It's a ger and a giorit that are getting together. She had children, he had children. Now they both had children beforehand. Now they get married. It's not a b'chor l'kohen because that's dependent on peterechem. Tani b'chor l'nachla, that there is a b'chor l'nachla, which sounds like Reish Lakish. After you convert, you get a reset button with regards to Reishito, no? And therefore it would be a b'chor l'nachla. Our Mishnah sounds very supportive of Reish Lakish. It's Yufta, the Rabbi Yochanan. It says, lo, lo'olam Yisrael, shelo yulu banim. It's a case where it's Yisrael, they didn't have children. Ve'ena b'chor l'kohen, it's richale. It's coming to teach you that there's no b'chor l'kohen. La'afuke mid Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Coming to go against that position that we saw in the Mishnah of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Damar b'chor l'nachla ulo kohen. Because he says in that instance, it's a b'chor for both things. Shenemar peter rechem bi Yisrael. Ashif tu rechem mi Yisrael. He believes that peter rechem is only called peter rechem when it's bi Yisrael. When it's a Jewish born child, that's when it matters in terms of peter rechem. The peter Yisrael. When it is peter, the first exit while she's the Israelite, that's what counts as a b'chor. Therefore, for him, it's a b'chor l'kohen and a b'chor l'nachala. So, kamash malon, delo, that's what the Mishnah is coming to tell you. Kamash malon, that's not the case. This is the dissenting opinion, which is that even though this is your first child as Israelite, you still have peter rechem before. The peter rechem has to be b'Israel. It has to be the firstborn child while you're Israelite. Meaning that if you already had a firstborn child, it's not the peter rechem while you're Israelite, and therefore it's not a b'chor. We don't hold like Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Tashma. Hayu lo banim biyoto oved kochavim. He had children while he was not Jewish. Vinit gayer, then he converts. Yesh lo b'chor l'nachala. He has a b'chor l'nachala. So now, here it sounds like pretty clear that he had children before, and now he comes and converts. He's going to now have a b'chor l'nachala. Amar avina v'yitem ravacha ha'vadai Rabbi Yossi Aglili. That is definitely Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Tamar petem rech Yisrael, achiv teru rechem Yisrael. V'yalif iu mina dida. So what they are suggesting is that this braita is authored by Rabbi Yossi Aglili. The machloket of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is in the sheet of the Chachamim. As to whether in the sheet of the Chachamim, when we say there's no b'chor for the Kohen, is that also true by b'chor l'nachala? But nobody says this within the sheet of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Yossi Aglili's sheet is that even by peter rechem, you can have a b'chor l'kohen after a conversion when you had children before. So the Gemara says that he probably would think the same thing with regards to b'chor l'nachala. He would extrapolate from Yalef Ihu, he would learn him, minadida, from her. Just like the woman, when she has a firstborn in Israel, that's called Petarech, even though she had children before, it's a much harder statement to make. If he thinks that, then he definitely thinks by b'chor l'nachala, it's the same thing. That the firstborn child, as a Jew, will be classified as the b'chor l'nachala. What they're basically doing is attributing that braita to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Once you do that, it alleviates the problem for Rabbi Yochanan, because it's not the Rabbanan Shita. Rabbi Yochanan says, I only say this in the Rabbanan, I don't say this in Rabbi Yossi Aglili Shita. And they make him the author of the Braita, saying that there is a B'chor L'nachla afterwards. Amar Rav Adar Barabba. Livia Shialda Bina Ketur Mihesleim. A Bat Levi that has a child, or you can have a Bat Kohen that has a firstborn child, doesn't have a din of Pidyon HaBen. So that's interesting. because we know that generally when it comes to yichus and these matters, it's carried through the father, not through the mother. So why over here, all of a sudden, is the bechor patur when it's a bat levi, or bat kohen, that is the mother? We discussed this back in the beginning of the Masechta, back on Daf Dalet. The Gemara is bringing this up again here as well. Di aber miman. Who's the father in this case? Ilema di aber mi kohen umi levi. The father's a kohen or a levi. Mayiria leviya. Why does it matter that she is a bat levi? Afil Israeli et nami. Even if she was just an Israeli, they'd still be patur. Because the father is a Kohen, the father is a Levi. El diaber mi Yisrael. They rather, the father is Yisrael, and we're saying that it's Patur, mi pijona ben. Lemishpechotam leveto dadamtiv. This week's parsha, what we just read in Parshat Bamidbar, that the mishpechot are determined by the father's family. So if the father's family is Yisrael, then why is it that you're Patur, mi pijona ben? The mother's yichus should have no bearing over here. Amra papa, Diaber mi oved kochavim. So Rav Papa says, you're right. The mother has no bearing over here. The only reason it works over here is because she became pregnant, she married a non-Jew. And when she married a non-Jew, that changes the dynamic over here. Lo teima alim b'demad amar ein mizuamim et avlad. They don't say that only according to the one who says that they don't affect the vlad. El afilo man damar mizuamim et avlad. Even though they affect the vlad, levi pasul mikre. It's called a Levi Pasul. So now here there are two stages in this statement, and both of them are subject to machloket. The first stage is that when you marry the Oved Kochavim, the child that is born is mityaches achar the mother, is now connected to the mother. The reason being is that a goy doesn't have yichus. Since a goy doesn't have yichus, in the absence of mishpachotam, the Beit Avotam, the Beit Imotam takes over. The mother's family takes over in that case. Now, how far that goes is subject to a machloket. The Gemara here calls him a Levi Pasul. How strongly do we take that? Do we take that seriously? That a mother who's a Bat Levi marries a goy, has a child, the child's clearly Jewish. Is the child now a full-fledged Levi? Because we ignore the chayis of the father because he's a goy, and therefore the mother's chayis takes over. So then you would say that, like the Gemara says here, Levi Pasul Mikre. He's a Levi. He's a full-fledged Levi, which is incredible. The mother can determine the yichus of the son to the point where she can create a Levi, she can create a Kohen, if it was a Bat Kohen, and the child would be yaches achar the mother and not after the father, because the father's an Oved Kochavim, and Oved Kochavim doesn't have any yichus, doesn't have chayis that we've already mentioned a number of times here. The limudim for that, the Gemara brings in other places. So now you're left with the mother's family to determine. Or does it mean simply over here for Pidyona Ben? Not that literally she produces offspring that are Levim, offspring that are Kohanim, but rather she produces a child that's not going to be subject to Pidyona Ben because her relationship to the child now has bearing on the fact that it's a Kohen or a Levi's family, and therefore you're Patur mi Pidyona Ben. So not to take it so far to say it's really a Levi, just to say that it's enough to say that the mother's yichus over here is enough to render it that you don't need pijona ben. So that's the first thing you have to ask is, when it says here, we ignore mishpachotam beit avotam, when there's a goy as the father, the mother's family takes over, how strongly does it take over? What are the implications of that? That's number one. Number two is, the Gemara here brings about mizuamim et avlad and emizuamim et avlad, which is a machloket at the end of the first perek in Yevamot with regards to an eved and an Oved Kochavim, a Baal Bat Yisrael. A non-Jew that marries a Jewish woman, or an Eved Kenani that marries a Jewish woman, what is the status of the offspring? Over there, there's a sheet that Rabbi Yochanan, that the offspring are Mamzerim. That when you have a Goy that marries a Israelite, or an Eved Kenani that marries an Israelite, the children are born are Mamzerim. There's another day over there that they are Kshirim, that they are totally fine, the children are Jewish children. There, the Gemara at the end has a little nuance about whether it means that it's a kasher legamre, or it means kasher with the, not the finest of yichus there. So that's a question about how kasher. Over there, the Gemara calls it something about mizuamim et avlad, or not mizuamim et avlad. The word zuama comes from the Gemara at the end of Shabbat that says that when Adam Arishon and Chava had this sin by the Eitz Hadaat, that there was Zuama that entered into the human offspring. There the Gemara speaks about maybe that the snake had relations with Chava, I don't want to get into so much detail about the Gemara there, because it's a difficult Gemara. Gemara says that when Bnei Yisrael stood at Mamad Har Sinai, that Zuama was removed from them. That means that Bnei Yisrael don't have Zuama. Goyim have Zuama. Or in essence, the word Zuama is a code word for Goy. That's basically what it teaches you. Zuamim means that we're speaking about a non-Jew in this situation. The other thing the Gemara there says that they're also Mizuamim because they eat Shkatzim V'Ramasim. There the Gemara says after the Chet Egel, the Bnei Yisrael lost their status. And therefore, what differentiates us between them in terms of Zuamim, there they say because they eat Shkatzim V'Ramasim, that has an impact on their Mizuamim. That's just as Mamar Muzgar, to where the word Zuam comes from. So now Rashi explains over here, what does it mean according to the one who says Mizuam, according to the one who doesn't say Mizuam? So Rashi claims that that has impact on the child. Even according to the one who says that Mizamim, that we connect the child to the Ovid Kuchavim, Afil Achi Patur, the Levi Pasul Mikre. Even so, he's called a Levi Pasul. Ho, Ve'itle Shma de Levi. Because as long as he has the name of a Levi. So according to Rashi, the situation is, according to the one who says Mizahamim, that is the one who says he's a Mamzer. According to the one who says that the offspring is a Mamzer, still over here you're going to be Patur from the din of Pidyon HaBen. That means, according to the one who says Eim Zuamim, that the Goy has no impact on the offspring, the offspring's a totally kosher Ben Levi over here, that opinion clearly believes you're Patur mi Pidyon HaBen. But even according to the one who says that the offspring is a Mamzer, then still you are Patur mi Pidyon HaBen because the Bat Levi still impacts the Yichus of the child, and it's called a Levi Pasul, even though he's a Mamzer because of the contribution of the Goy. Tosafot says just the opposite. He says, according to one who says that the Zuma has impact, that's the one who says that the Yisraelite has no mention over here. Tosafot says, if the Goy's Yichus matters, and that means that Zuamin, that your Goy's impact matters, then there's no Mamzerut. Mamzerut only exists for Jews. And therefore, it has to be that the mother is impactful over here. So Tosafot reads just the opposite Rashi. Rashi says, if the Goy has impact, that makes it into a Mamzer. Right? Tosafot says just the opposite. If we're following the Goy, then this child is totally free and clear, because if the Goy following the Goy, there's no such thing as Mamzerut for a Goy. It's only when it's a Bat Kohen or Bat Levi or Bat Israel that married the Goy, and then you have the offspring, and we then miyaches it after the mother, then you're going to have Mamzerut, because then the mother's impact on the child makes it that whatever the relationship was an improper relationship, and the child now has a din of Mamzerut associated with it. If we follow the Yichus of the father, the child's totally kasher now, because the child Mamzerut doesn't apply to non-Jews. So Tosafot reads the Gemara just the opposite of Rashi. The one who says we're not choshesh lezuama, that we don't worry about the zuama, then he's a mamzer. According to the one that says that we are choshesh lezuama, so that means that the goy impacts and he's not a mamzer over here. But if the goy impacts and he's not a mamzer, then he has no connection to the mother. Doesn't have a connection to the mother, you would think maybe he should not be patur mi pidyon haben. Nevertheless, we call him a levi pasul. That's again this idea that he is maybe not a mamzer, but he's still a levi pasul because the mother still has impact in terms of that yichus in the child. So even though the child is kasher, because we follow the father, and there's no din of mamzerut, the still mother has impact over here to be poterim. Okay, that's the view of Rav Papa, that the child was born through a goy, and that's why you're potur from Pidyon HaBen here. Bar b'rei de Rav Yosef, amar mishmei de Rabba, do'olam di abar mi'Yisrael. No, the case here is where was a father that was Yisrael. V'shani hotam d'amar kra peter rechem. Because the din of Pidyon HaBen is dependent on the mother. Peter rechem talor rachmana. Therefore, the mothers have disproportionate impact over here. Despite the fact that normally mothers, yichus, doesn't matter. Over here, where the whole issue of Pidyon HaBen derives from the mother, because it has to be Peter Rechem, and it's not the mother's firstborn, there's going to be no din of Bechor over here, despite whatever the standing of the father is. Therefore, the mother's standing as a Bat Kohen, a Bat Levi, has impact in order to be Poter, mi Pidyon HaBen. That's the way we paskin. We based on the Gemara and Chulin, we paskin like Mar Berei Yosef, Bat Kohen and Bat Levi that have a Bechor, they do not have the din of Pidyon HaBen. It's not. Mishu Yulu Banim, Benasai Isha Shalo Yalda. Person already had children, marries a woman who didn't have children yet. Nitzgaira Mi'uberet. Nishtachara Mi'uberet. They converted when she was already pregnant. Shifra Kananit converted while she was pregnant. And then the child is born. Or a case, there was a case where children got mixed up. Her child with the child of a Kohenet, her child with the child of Levia, her child with Isha Shkvar Yelda, her child with a woman who already gave birth. Or a situation in which she didn't wait the requisite 3 months between her previous marriage and this marriage, whether the previous marriage was terminated through death or through divorce. He says that she got married, Yelda. Now she gives birth, and you're doing Ben Tet, the Rishon, and Ben Zayin, the Acharon. And we don't know if the child was a 9-month child from the first marriage or a 7-month child from the second marriage. In all these cases, Bechor the Kohen, Veinu Bechor the Nachala. In all these cases, it is a Bechor the Kohen and not a Bechor the Nachala. Michlau, Dekuna, Vidlivia, Turim. Over here, it sounds like that a Kohenet and a Livia are Turim. It said here that she got mixed up with a child that was born to a Kohenet. Got mixed up with a child that was born to a Levia. Makes it sound like her child is clearly Chayav in Bechor because she's a Yisraelit. But the other child is Pator because the mother was a Kohen. Or the mother was a Levia. Diaber Miman. Who's the father here? Ilema Diaber Migon or Levi. If the father is a Kohen or Levi, Yochi Mayriya Kohen of the Levia. Why does it matter what the mother is? Afilu Bat Yisrael Nami. Even a Bat Yisrael in that case is Ptura from the din of Pidyon Bechor. Ela diabar me oved kochavim. Must be a case where the father was an oved kochavim. Kohenet ptura? How could a kohenet be ptura if she married a kohen? So until now I've been mentioning bat levia, bat kohenet in the same breath. You're going to see here that the din is actually very different. Ba'amara papa, bodiklon rova. It's rapapa, it's speaking about his rebbe, rova, so that would be more likely gears over here. If it was Rava, then it would be Badiglan Rava, which is Rava's Rebbe. So you have to switch either a Papa or Rava. One of those two is incorrect. This is what he was testing us. Kohenet, Shinit Abrami Oveid Kochavim. A Bat Kohen that married an Oveid Kochavim. Mao, what's the din with the offspring? Vaminale. And I said, Live Haino Adar Ravada Barava, the Amar. Isn't that the same as what Ravada Barava said that we've just brought before? Leviash, Lealda. Bat Levi that gives birth, but not Patur Mechamesh Shlamim. So to me, it's a Bat Kohen that had a child, should be Patur Mechamesh Shlamim. Barmalei Achi Ashtri says the comparison is incorrect. That's not the same din. Bishlama Levia B'kdushata Kaima. A Bat Levi doesn't lose her standing as a Levia when she has a relationship with the Noved Kochavim, or if something happens that's problematic. We'll see in a second. The Tanya. If a Livia is taken into captivity, and the fear is when she was in captivity that she was raped, and therefore now she had Bia or Bila with a non-Jew, which would make her into a quote-unquote a Zona. Zona just means an illicit relationship, an improper relationship. Or she had an illicit relationship. She's not precluded from partaking in Maaser Rishon. Maaser Rishon is an entitlement, irrespective of her standing. Now, truth is, anybody can eat Maaser Rishon. And Yisrael can eat Maaser Rishon. It's no chiddush that you can eat Maaser Rishon. What it must mean over here is that you can actually give her the Maaser Rishon and be Yotzei, Netina the Levi, when you give it to her, even after she's had a Bilat Znut. That's what Tosfot says over here. In Chokim Isha B'Goren, you can't give out Maaser Rishon to a Isha B'Goren, about Mechalkim Lehem B'Batayim. You can give it to them when they're at home or in their houses. And therefore, she's entitled to get Maaser Rishon even after a problematic relationship. Ela Kohenet, Kevin Dibayla Havia Zara. Once a Bat Kohen has a relationship, whether it's a consensual or non-consensual relationship, she has a Biat Znot. In that case, she loses her status as a Bat Kohen, and she's no longer entitled to eat Truma. She's precluded from the world of Truma. In that situation, now you've differentiated between the din of a Kohenet and the din of a Levia. A Bat Levi, once she has this problematic relationship with an Oveid Kochavim, that still produces an offspring that is Patur Mi Pidyon Ben, because the status of her being a Bat Levi does not change in that case. On the other hand, if you have a Bat Kohen that marries a Oveid Kochavim, that demotes her status. She loses her status as a Bat Kohen. And therefore the offspring that comes afterwards should be Chayav in Pidyon Ben, because she's no longer deemed to be a Bat Kohen. Tosfot over here says, wait a minute. Okay, she's not a Bat Kohen, but she's now a Bat Levi. Every Kohen is really a Levi plus. He's from Shevet Levi. Just happens to be a higher level of Shevet Levi. What you see from here is, that's not true. A Kohen is a totally separate entity than a Levi. And therefore, when you're demoted from being a Kohen, you don't drop down to being a Levi. You drop down to being nothing. And that's what Tosfot says over here. She's worse than a Leviyah. In a Bat Kohen, because all of her Kedusha is a Kedushat Agavra, then when you lose the Kedushat Agavra, it takes away everything from her. Bat Levi, when it's not a Kedushat Agavra, it's a Yichus issue, then when there's a Znut, doesn't change anything, and she remains a Bat Levi even afterwards. So a Bat Kohen is in a worse situation than a Bat Levi, even though she's on a higher level. Or maybe because she's on a higher level, that creates the problem. So either you have to say that a Kohen is not viewed as a Levi plus, it's Levi is one thing, Kohen is a totally separate track. Or even if you believe that a Kohen is a Levi plus, that elevation by the Bat Kohen is a Kedushat Gavra. And that Kedushat Gavra, when it's abrogated, lowers her down to Israelit and not down to a Bat Levi because of the fact that it was generated through a Kedushat Gavra. But now that presents a problem for us. Then Marbi Rav Yosef, according to Rav, who says that a Bat Levi and a Bat Kohen are Peturim from Bechor, Pinjan Bechor, even when they marry Israel, our Mishnah will be a case where it says there Leviyah and Kohenet, where it was from Israel, and you have no problem at all. El Rav Papa, but my Mukilo, how is he going to fix our Mishnah? He says the whole case is not when Israel marries them. There's no Peturim if you don't bet. Only when Ovi Kuchavi marries them that you have Ptur Mipidyon HaBen. That works for the Leviyah. That doesn't work for the Kohenet. That's not going to fit into our Mishnah. So the Olam, the Aber Mikohen, Be'i Bat Yisrael. Scenario in the Mishnah is where it's Kohen marrying a Bat Yisrael, Israelit. Vamai Karila Kohenet. So then why is she called a Kohenet? Tibna Kohen. Because her son is a Kohen. Which is important that the woman's status as a Kohenet, once she marries a Kohen, is determined by two factors. One factor is her being married. As long as she's married to her husband, she's kinyan kaspo of her husband, and therefore she's entitled to eat. Same way that an Eved Knani can eat truma with a Kohen because of kinyan kaspo. Once her husband passes away, she still can eat truma if she has a son. If she has a son that's a Kohen, the Bana that is a Kohen empowers her as a Kohenet. And that's why she's called a Kohenet, because her status does change when she has an offspring. That offspring now makes her into a Kohenet, even post the time that her husband passes away. And so her status actually changes because of the fact that she had a child that was a Kohen. And that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah, that the case of Bat Kohen is a situation in which it was a Kohen that married a Bat Yisrael. And the Chiddush is that she's called a Kohenet now because of the fact that she has a child that is a Kohen. Itmar, another wild scenario. Kohen Shemait, a Kohen that passed away, Viniach ben Chalal. He had an illicit relationship, not of the Arayot type, but the type that a Kohen is precluded from. Kohen's not allowed to marry a Grusha, a Chalutza. Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry, in addition to that, an Almanah. So if they have any of those marriages, the offspring is a Chalal, which means that he is basically Ois Kohen. The child that's born from that improper relationship doesn't have any status as a Kohen. He's equivalent to, as Rashi says, Real, Yisrael Domi. He's like a full-fledged Israel. So now, this Kohen, say for instance, married a Grusha and had a Bechor. So now the Bechor that's there is a Israel. Now that Bechor, he has to do Pidyon HaBen on because the Bechor is in Israel. But what happened was the father died and he left this child. Now, is there an obligation on this child to do Pidyon Bechor on himself? Chista Amar, HaBen Chayav Liftot Et Atzmo. Because it says he has to redeem himself. Rabba bar Rav Huna mar, ein chayav lebdod et etzmo. He doesn't have to do pidyon haben. Koheched emeita av lachar shloshim. If the father passed away after 30 days, 30 days is the threshold from where you become chayav and pidyon haben. That's because we know the child is a viable entity, it's a bar kayomo, and therefore you only do pidyon haben on the 31st day, after the child's already passed 30 days of life. So now, after 30 days, the obligation devolved upon the father, and the father happens to be a Kohen. The Kuliyamo Lopligi Dana Ben Chayav Nidodeh Atzmo. He doesn't have to bode himself. Shrei Zachah Ha'av B'Pidyono. Because the father was Chayav to do Pidyon HaBen, and his Chiyuv Pidyon HaBen doesn't require him to give the money to anyone else. The way Rashi describes it over here, that the Kohen could separate out the money, Havi Mafrishle, he would segregate out the money, And then he keeps it for himself. He gives it to the Kohen. He's the Kohen. He's doing Pidyon HaBen on his son who's now Israel because he's a Halal. But he does that Pidyon HaBen and then he keeps the money because he's the Kohen that's recipient of the Pidyon HaBen. Then the son who inherits him is inheriting money that belonged to his father and that's why he's Patur Legamri. Tosafot at the end here says he doesn't have to separate out the money. It's as if he's Patur Legamri because his father is the Kohen. Just like any father Kohen who has a child that's a Bechor is not Chayav and Pidyon HaBen, so too over here he's not Chayav and Pidyon HaBen. He doesn't have to segregate out the money. So it's a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot whether he has to do is segregate out the money and say this is for the Pidyon to keep it, or simply he just doesn't have to do Pidyon HaBen because he's a father that is a Kohen. Keep Lige. Where do they argue? Heichad the Meita B'toch Shloshim Yom. Where the father passed away before they reached the 30-day threshold, which means the father never reached the point of Chiyu. Chisamar ben Chayav Liptote, that's small. The child is Chayav to redeem himself. Dalo Zocha Aviv Lipidjono. The father never took possession of that money. Yes, had he been around, he would have been the Kohen, and he would have kept the money, and then he could have passed that inheritance to his child, but he wasn't around. And the child himself is Israel, so he's not entitled to that money, and therefore he has to do Pidyon HaBen. Rabba bar Rahuna Amar, ain't ben chayav nidota that small. The child is not required to redeem himself. Darmalei. Atina mikoach gavra, dolo matzina leshtoye dina ba'day. The Kohen comes and says, pay up your Pidyon HaBen. He says, well, you couldn't have gone to my father and demanded Pidyon HaBen, so why can you come to me and demand Pidyon HaBen? I'm coming from someone who is patur mi Pidyon HaBen. You can't make me chayav in Pidyon HaBen. Now, first of all, the Machloket Rashi and Tosafot would apply here too. When the son gets to keep the money, what does he have to do? According to Tosafot, he has to do nothing. It's automatically his because it would have belonged to his father and he keeps it. According to Rashi, the son has to segregate out the money for Pidyon HaBen and then he can keep it. But he has to segregate it out. That would be the same Machloket we saw before would apply here. The Machloket between Rav Chista and Rav Huna is they did a Pidyon HaBen, which is obligation on the father. Then when the son gets the obligation, what type of obligation is that? Is the son's obligation because of the failure of the father to do Pidyon HaBen? Maybe that the father should have done the Pidyon HaBen. He can't do it either because he died and now he's unable to accomplish it, or for whatever reason he was a posheya, he was negligent and he didn't do it. So now the son takes over the obligation of the father. If you see it in that way, if the father was patur, you can't say the son is now chayav. And that's the view of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, if you can't go after my father, you can't go after me. Rav Chista, on the other hand, views it that the obligation on the child is actually a separate obligation. That could be for one of two reasons. Either because the father's obligation is one obligation, the child's obligation is a separate obligation. When the father doesn't do his obligation, the son has his own independent obligation. That's one way to view it. Or you could view it that all along it's the son's obligation. Just when he's born, he's a katan. So he can't do it. So since he can't do it, we obligate the father to take care of it instead of the son because he's the only one who can do it when the son is a katan. But that means the obligation always is on the son. It's just now the father had that obligation to take care of it while the son was a katan. Once the son becomes a gadol, he has to take care of it himself. So that will be the fundamental machloket here between Rav Chista and Rav Huna as to how does Pidyon HaBen for a son doing it for himself, how does it work? Is it an independent obligation, or is it derivative of his father's obligation? Tanan, nit gaira mi uberet. If she converted while she was already pregnant, b'chor the kohen. We said that the child that's born there is peterechem b'Yisrael. It is b'chor the kohen, but not b'chor the nachla. V'amai, lemalei atina mikor kavra delo matzi b'shtuyin dinabadeh. Why doesn't he say to him, my father was a goy, and you can't go after him for Pidyon HaBen? Rashi says the reason is, delo tzayi dino. He's not going to listen to us. So from Rashi, it sounds like he does have an obligation of Pidyon HaBen, just he's not going to listen to us, which is very strange. Why does this goy have an obligation in Pidyon HaBen? So Rashi has an interesting formulation over here, that the reason that you couldn't have gone after the goy is because he's not going to listen to us. Look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, says, Mikoch Oved Kochavim Delo Yichayiv. He explains it like we would have thought to explain it, which is that a goy is not chayav in Pidyon HaBen. Since he's not chayav in Pidyon HaBen, you couldn't have collected the money from him. It's more fundamental. It's not a problem that he's not going to listen to us. It's the fact that he's not chayav at all in Pidyon HaBen. So why should I now be chayav in Pidyon HaBen? It's the same claim that you have with the Kohen. By the Kohen, my father was a Kohen. You couldn't have gone after him, so why should you be able to go after me? My father's a goy. You can't go after him, so why should you be able to go after me? Same claim. Shiny Ovei Kuchavim, Delet Lei Chayis. By the Ovei Kuchavim, it's totally different. Because he has no chayis. Rashi over here says, Lagabe Israel, le shum yachas, ben zabe migo kocho. He's not coming from the koach of his father, the koten kishinola dami. He's as if he's a brand new child, or as if he has no relationship to his father. It means the obligation only existed on the child. It never existed on the father at all. And so because of that, there was no obligation on the father. The only obligation here was an obligation on the son. That obligation on the son, therefore, is an independent obligation. And even Rav Huna would agree here that it's an independent obligation because you cannot connect it back to his father. Can't be that he's now taking over his father's obligation. His father never had an obligation. Or he has no relationship to his father. And since he has no relationship to his father, the obligation that he has now is an independent obligation. Amar Rabbi Shimon Yasinya, Amar Rabbi Shimon Lokish, Kohen Shemait Betoch Shloshim, Kohen that dies before the 30 days are elapsed, Eniach Ben Chalal, and he left over a Ben Chalal, a Ben from a Grusha, like our case that we started out the Amud with, a Ben Chayav Nibdodet Atzmo. The son is Chayav to be Bode himself, Shlo Zachah Av Bipinyono. Because the Av never did what was his obligation, or never reached the point where he could have done what his obligation was. And therefore, a child is now obligated. That's like Rav Chista, who says that when it's under 30 days and the father never came into possession of the item, that the child does not get an exemption because the child has an independent chiyuv. That is chayav b'pidyono. He's passing like Rav Chista. Meit lachar shloshim yom, we already said everybody agrees. Ein habayim chayav l'dodo t'mo sherei zachah b'pidyono. After 30 days, the father already is obligated, and that obligation now came to him because he's a Kohen. So according to Rashi, if he separated out the money, or according to Tosafot, even without separating out the money, he's entitled to keep the money or the pidyon ha-bechor, and therefore, there's no obligation of pidyon on the child. That everybody agreed to. And so, the second din is like Kulei Alma. The first din about Tosh Lashim is like Rav Chista, and Lakish is paskening like Rav Chista, which is the way that we pasken. And so now the Gemara says, V'chei mishlo sh'atach rei bala gimo kodoshim. So to a woman who didn't wait the requisite 3 months between her marriages. Sounds like from over here that this child is precluded from getting b'chor lenachla, but he's still entitled to inherit with the other children. Ve'amai. Why should he be able to inherit with the other children? Yes, he's a b'chor lekohen, because Mimonav Shaka was a pet derechem for this woman. He's not a b'chor lenachla because we don't know if he belonged to the first husband or the second husband. So maybe over there, he's precluded from b'chor lenachla. But that means that he is entitled to nachla in general, he just doesn't get a din of b'chor. Why should that be the case? Lezel legabe hai, v'lidche. He goes to the other brothers from the first husband. They're going to say, you're not our brother. Legabe hai. Then he'll go to the brothers of the second husband. V'lidchei. And they'll say, you're not our brother, you belong to the other family. So forget about not getting b'chor the nachla. He's not going to get nachla whatsoever. It's coming to talk, teach you about the child that comes afterwards. B'chor the Kohen. This child that's born in this situation is clearly a b'chor the Kohen. But b'charav ain't b'chor the nachla. Not that he's not a b'chor the nachla. Of course he's not a b'chor the nachla. He's not even a ben the nachla. But as far as a b'chor the nachla, the child that's born after him will not be a b'chor the nachla. Because the next child is a safek. The next child that's born to the second husband could be a bechor because the child before was from the first husband. Or maybe he's not a bechor because the child was born to the second husband. Since we don't know, he doesn't get entitlement of bechor. But he's clearly the child of the second husband. If he's the child of the second husband, he gets nachala. He just doesn't get bechor in the nachala. And that's what that statement was made about. Where it says, V'lichtavu harshala dodi. Why doesn't he give a power of attorney over here? Now, harsha is where you empower the under individual to act on your behalf, like a power of attorney does. Some say, like the Balamor, that that's a din in shlichut. You basically make him into your shliach. The Ramban is opposed to that view. He says harsha is more powerful than shlichut. Regular shlichut only entitles the person to do whatever you ask them to do. Doesn't allow you to go to court on his behalf because the person could say, La bal devarim didiat, you're not my counterparty. When you come to harsha, you can't say that because you're in the shoes of the individual. Also, if the person passes away, by shlichut, it terminates upon the death of the principal. But even after death, harsha stays in force. So Ramban sees harsha as being a much more powerful entity, like a power of attorney, not just a din and shlichut. So now, why don't they write harsha to each other? meaning that this child, that is a safek born to the first husband, safek born to the second husband, and then the next child that is born to the second husband, the two of them, imonoshach, one of them is the bechor. It's either the first child because she was born to the second husband, not the first husband, or it's the second child because the first child was born to the first husband, and now the second child is the firstborn of the second husband. In that case, imonoshach, one of them is the bechor. So if they write a power of attorney to each other, then basically they come as a single entity, they should be able to claim their bechorah. If you say that our mission is not talking about a case where there's a shah, that's why there's no bechor the nakla over here. We're going to see upcoming, that Shmuel upcoming is going to say that the Mishnah upcoming is speaking about our shah. So our mission is also speaking about our shah. It says, this is helpful then, or supportive of Rabbi Yanai's contention. Dama Rabbi Yanai, hukru b'lesof nitarvu. If we identify the children as to which parent they belong to, then they got mixed up. Kodvim arsha zelazeh. They can empower each other then and give a power of attorney. Lo hukru, if we never identified which child belonged to which parent, u'lesof nitarvu, and then they got mixed up, ain't kodvim arsha zelazeh. You don't have a right to use a arsha. Meaning that the view of Rabbi Yanai is that Harsha is dependent on there being, at some point, there was knowledge that had the information clearly as to whom these children belong to. And once you have that information, even though the information is lost later on, they can empower each other to act as a single entity. On the other hand, the other possibility is that we've never identified them. They were always mixed up. And now they want to come as a single entity. There we don't allow them to do that. That's the view of Rabbi Yanai. Rashi explains the case here as being a case by any case of nakala. Any case where you have two children, we're not sure whether they belong to this parent, that parent, forget about bechor. This has nothing to do with bechor. This is a din in our shah in general. So for Rashi, this din applies anytime you want to empower two parties to come as a single entity, they have to have at some point had a clear connection to whomever they're trying to collect from, and then only later become mixed up. Others suggest that this is only a case by Bechor. This is a unique situation by Bechor, and that's because the din by Bechor is Yakir. You have to be recognizable, you have to be identifiable, or that has to be Yadul Obanim. You have to know who the children belong to, and there's a specific Zeret HaKatuv by Bechor that requires Hakara. And there you need to have Hakara in order to have Arsha. Anywhere else in Halacha it won't matter. Even if you never knew who it was, the Arsha can bring the two parties together. They be monofstock, make a collection. That seems to make more sense because then you have a reason by Bechor why you would differentiate because we have special dinim by Bechor, whether it's Yakir or Yaldul Obanim, which are Gzerot HaKatuv. And that's why it's unique din by Bechor, not applying to everything else. Rashi says this is a din in our Shah in general that applies to anyone. Now, the question is, does this only apply to the last case in our Mishnah? Or does this apply to all the other cases? The Gemara over here only quoted it in a scenario where it was a child, safek shiva le rishon, safek tisha le acharon. Did they bring that because that was the last case mentioned in the Mishnah, and it's the easiest one to explain that way, but it applies to all the cases? Or is this a special din by the din of ben shiva le rishon, ben tisha le sheni, and that's the only time this din would apply? But with the other cases of safek, you don't have that issue, because over there, the father is clearly known who the father is, it's just we don't know which child belongs to which father. Over here, in this case, it's unique, because we don't even know who the father is in the case, because it's a safek as to which one of them is the father. So you could argue that this din is unique to that last case, or this din applies to all the cases before. They're just bringing this as the example, because it's the easiest one, where there's a full-fledged safek over here, where you can't have a harsha'ah no matter what, because there's no way you could ever identify who the child is. And it makes it obvious what the din is or why there's no harsha'ah over here. And that's why they brought that as the example. But it'd be true of all the cases before in the Mishnah as well. All right, next Mishnah. Ezu b'chor l'nachala u'l'kohen. Now we have the third permutation. A child that coincidentally happens to be both a b'chor l'kohen and a b'chor l'nachala. Now, obviously, if he's the firstborn of the mother and the firstborn of the father, then he's a Bechor the Kohen and a Bechor the Nachla, because the father is Reshit Ono, and for the mother, it's Peterechem, and that's why he has both standings. Obviously, we don't need you to tell us that. That's the case where there's something else intervening that might have made it that he wasn't a Bechor. For instance, Hamapelet Sphere Malemayim. She discharges a sack full of water, Malay Dam, full of blood, Malay Gininim. Rashi says over here, Givanim, but that means different colors, but that means different types of entities, different types of shapes or beings that came out in it. Or according to the Rambam, Gininim means worms, Tolaim. It's full of like worms or things floating around. Amepelet can mean Dagim, Chagavim, Shkatsim, Viramasim. Or she miscarries, and that which comes out has the shape or the form of a fish, locust, Shkatsim, Rasim, creepy, crawly things, any of these items. Amepelet Yomar Baim. Or she miscarries in the first 40 days. Abacharim, Bechor Lenachala, Ulekoin. Any child born after that is both a Bechor Lenachala, that's not a question, because the entities before were not viable entities. So it's clearly Reishit to know. But it's also a Peter Rechem. Because anything that happened before was not called a birth. And if it's not called a Leida, then it's not called Peter Rechem. None of these items are considered to be a Leida. So in terms of the first number of items, those are a Shafir, a sack full of items that don't have any form to them. Since they don't have a form, then they're clearly not considered to be a Leida. In terms of Dagim, Chagavim, Shkatsim, Ramasim, that's even according to Rabbi Meir, when the previous Mishnah said, if you had a chaya, beima, and an oaf, that would be considered a leida. Chamim disagrees. According to Chamim, it's clearly not a leida over here. But even according to Rabbi Meir, who says a leida for an oaf, beima, and chaya, that has that shape in the miscarriage, it is a leida. That's because the Torah uses the word yitzira by them, like it uses by Adam. And that's why the Gemara Nida says that he thinks that's also called a leida. But over here, by these entities, like a Dagim, Chagavim, Shkatsim, Rasim, where there's no mention of Yetzirah by them, even he agrees that it doesn't have a din of Leida. Yom Arba'im is based on the fact that the Yetzirah Tavlad, the fetus taking shape and becoming an entity, only happens after 40 days, on the 41st day. That means any miscarriage during the first 40 days is not a miscarriage of an entity that is an entity. It's not reached the status of an Ubar yet. And therefore, whatever is discharged at that point is not considered to be a Leida. For that reason, none of these miscarriages or discharges are considered to be Peter Rechem. In all these cases, a Bachrayim, wherever a child is born after them, will be a Bechor Lenachla Ulekoin, Reshito No, and Peter Rechem, Yotze Dolphin, a C-section, Vabacharav, and the child born after the child that came with the C-section, Shneem, Einan Bechor. Both of them are not a Bechor, Lola Nachla, Velola Koin. The Gemara will explain why. But neither of them are Bechor, not for Kohen, not for Nachala. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Arishon the Nachala, the first one has a din of a Bechor the Nachala, Vashayni the Chamei Shleim, and the second one is a Bechor the Kohen. This is Rabbi Shimon Shita that we saw before in the Gemara in Chulin, and will be explained over here. The Rambam says over here that this has to be a case of twins, because no mother after a C-section will survive. Rashi in other places mentions that they use some sort of medication to have the mother give birth, that maybe even afterwards you could have a birth as well. In their day, it would be very unlikely. Once you've had a C-section, the fact that a woman could then carry and have a regular Leida would be very unusual. You need, because the weakness that's created from the first C-section. So in their day, this would be a very unlikely scenario. That's why the Rambam says it has to be a case of twins. Otherwise, the mother's not going to survive it. Rashi suggests that maybe it's not even by twins. Now, Rishon v'nachalalo. The first one that's born is not a Bechor Lenachala when it was brought out as a C-section, because it says, V'yaldu lo banim. Now Rashi says that the word Leida means Derech Leida. That's to be born through the birth canal. And he learns it out from the word Leida itself inherently means through the birth canal. Tosafot does not like that explanation. He shows that in other places that's not sufficient. The word Leida in and of itself is not enough of a reason to say that it is born through the birth canal. Therefore, he says this is a gzera shava of Leida, Leida. By beginning of Parsha Tazria, where it speaks about a woman giving birth, it says there, im zachar te leid, she has a male, then this is the din in terms of tumatara, im nekeva te leid, she has a girl, then this is the din. Over there, the word te leid is extraneous, because it already said im zachar te leid, why do you need to write im nekeva te leid? You could just say im nekeva. From the extraneous word of te leid, Rabbi Shimon learns that even a yotze dolphin is considered to be a Leida. Chachamim over there disagree and say that the Teleid over there teaches you because it says Kitazria. Kitazria means from the Makom HaMazret. The Leida can only be in the place where the Zera entered. And just like the zera entered through the birth canal, so too the fetus has got to exit through the birth canal in order for it to be a leida. So what Tosfot says is, they mean the leida over here, but yaldul banim, zera shava to the leida by Tazria, and teaches you that the word leida means leida through the birth canal. Obviously, for Tosfot, ikur chaser min a sefer. The whole din is a din in gzer shava. You're just mentioning one word and don't mention the other half of gzer shava. For Rashi, the difficulty is that Tosfot points out the word teleid doesn't automatically mean leida through the birth canal, because the Gemara there needs Tazria to teach you that it is through the birth canal. The word leida by itself was not sufficient. And Rav Shimon disagrees and says the word leida actually teaches you yotze dofen. So that's why it's not a before the nachala, the first one. The chamesh la'im nami lo, peter rechem bayin. He's also not the firstborn for the Kohen, because he didn't come through the birth canal. It was a C-section. Sheni, the second child of Nachala Lo, is not a Bechor Nachala, because he's not Reshito No, Be'inan. He's not the first in the strength of the father. The first child was the first strength of the father. He was precluded because of Yaldo Lo Banim. But nevertheless, he was the Reshito No. The Kamesh Na'im Nami Lo, Kasava Bechor Lezvarachad Lo Be'Bechor. That is because if you're only a Bechor for one thing, you're not called a Bechor. That means over here, Bechor Peter Rechem, is it enough that you're Peter Rechem to be called a Bechor, which is one item? Or do you also need to be Bechor, the firstborn child? So what it's saying here is that it's not enough just to be Peter Rechem. Just because you're the first one to go through the birth canal, that's not enough. You need birth canal plus the first child to be born. Since you only have one of those two, you're not considered to be a Bechor the Kohen. The first one has a Div Nachala, Vasheni L'Shchamei Shloim, and the second one's a Bechor the Kohen. B'Shimon L'Tamei, B'Shimon's L'Shita Dol, Damar, Teleid, that's what Imkeva Teleid, to teach you Teleid, the Rabot Yotzei Dolphin. That extra Teleid, that extraneous word, teaches you that even a C-section is called a Leida. Now that's only true by human beings, it's not true by animals, the Gemara already discussed that in Chulin, and the Rishonim pointed out, that it's a specific din by Adam from the reboy of Teleid by Tazria. But Sheni, the Chamesh Shloim, the second one is a Bechor the Kohen, Kasavar Bechor the Dvar Echad, Avi Bechor. If you Bechor for one item, you are a Bechor. Over here, it's Peter Rechem. Even though not the firstborn child, it's still the Peter Rechem. And according to Rabbi Shimon, that's enough. If you're Peter Rechem, it is sufficient. Now, this is what Tosfot points out, that Rabbi Tarfon, earlier in the Masechta, said he also had a Safek. Whether Bechor the Dvar Echad is a Bechor. And over there, he was willing to make two animals the Bechorim. One animal the Bechor, because it's the firstborn, and another animal the firstborn, because it was Peter Rechem. And when he says when you're Bechor the Dvar Echad, it means either or would be sufficient. And he says over here, Rabbi Shimon clearly disagrees with that. Rabbi Shimon only has one item that would be true to make you into Bechor, that's Peter Rechem. He doesn't mean that either or is enough when he says Bechor the Dvar Echad. He doesn't mean either Peter Rechem or the firstborn child. He means only Peter Rechem. And therefore, Tosfot says that Rabbi Shimon argues on Rabbi Tarfon and disagrees with that Shita. He believes that it's only by Peter Rechem. That's enough. Peter Rechem in of itself is enough. It's the mandatory that that's the one item. Rabbi Shimon says that the first one, therefore, is a Bechor Nachala, because the C-section is considered to be a Leida. The second one is a Bechor the Kohen, because he's the first one through the birth canal. He's the Peter Rechem, and he'll be a Bechor the Kohen, and there'll be a pigeon and a ben for the second child, according to Rabbi Shimon. Okay, we'll stop here at the bottom of Mem Zayin Amud Bet.